In the last session, we had the opportunity to talk briefly about new concepts in the way science and Western physics is beginning to view our universe. Specifically, the idea that we live in a world of many, many, many dimensions, at least 10 dimensions that are required through the new theories, the superstring theories of the universe. Well, along with those new views of dimensionality have come new understandings of time, precisely what time means to us in our lives. Now, time is such a fascinating topic to be able to share with audiences. It's a universal phenomenon almost that I'm experiencing as I've had the opportunity to travel throughout the world in the last 18 months or so. And what I've found is that almost universally, people all over the world feel as if time is speeding up. Things are happening faster in their lives. I know maybe you notice this in your lives as well. I thought at first maybe it was just an American phenomenon or a Western phenomenon, but I found it in the jungles of South America. I found it in the arid deserts of the highlands of Asia. So my sense is, at this point, it appears to be almost a universal phenomenon, and I believe that it is tied to changes that are happening, physical changes happening within our world and within our Earth. And if we are perceiving time differently, and if time works a little differently than we have thought perhaps in the past through the view of the new physics, it lends itself and presents opportunities in terms of the events of our lives and how they play out in the world around us. And I'd like to share a story just to illustrate this point, maybe to help understand a little bit about how our expectation or lack thereof of what happens in our lives affects the group experience. 1992, I had a group of Westerners in Egypt, and we were on a 14-day journey, pilgrimage, throughout Egypt that had carried us all through the pyramids and through the temples and down the Nile, all the way over onto the Sinai Peninsula. And we had just spent 3 days in Mount Sinai in Egypt in the St. Catherine's Monastery area. We were on our way back into Cairo, into Giza, the Giza Plateau, and the finale of this particular journey was that we would be given private access inside the Great Pyramid at midnight that night. We would go into the structure and the guards would close the doors behind us, and we'd have the opportunity to experience this in the intimacy of our own group. And I'm sharing this in detail because this is very important, the expectation, the feeling of what the group was experiencing during that period of time. We left our village in St. Catherine about 8 o'clock in the morning, and we began driving in the long, windy roads in the Sinai Mountains to the highways along the Red Sea, and following the Red Sea, we come up underneath the Suez Canal. We go through the battlefields of the Six-Day War between the Egyptians and the Israelis. In the area, it's both very desolate and very beautiful all at the same time. We were going through checkpoints all the way through. About every 20 minutes, our bus would have to stop for a security checkpoint. Someone would board the bus. They'd look over all of our papers, all of our identification, and ask us some questions, and they would leave. And there's a reason I'm sharing that detail as well, because every 20 minutes or so, the bus had to stop and had to go through one of these checkpoints, and there were a specific number of checkpoints along the way. Well, as we made our journey along the Sinai and the Suez and came up onto the mainland, the continent of Africa, we were engaged in conversation. Everyone was very excited about the opportunity to go inside of the Great Pyramid. We've been anticipating this for the entire journey. And there were people that began asking themselves, I wonder what it feels like to be inside. And rather than thinking about how long it was taking them to get to Cairo, they began feeling what they imagined it would feel like to be inside of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And all of a sudden, our bus came to a stop, and we looked out the windows, and we saw that our driver had gotten out of his bus, and we had a military escort both in front of us and behind us, a covered jeep that had a number of soldiers armed before us and then following us behind just for security. And they were getting out of their vehicle. Our translator had just stepped down off of the bus, and they were all milling around in front of the bus, scratching their heads, looking at their watches with very perplexed looks on their faces. And as the group leader, I felt it was my responsibility to find out what was going on so I could let our group know that everything was okay. So I got off the bus and I walked over to my very good friend and my translator and guide, And I asked him, what in the world is going on? And he looked at me and he said, my friend Greg, in his Egyptian accent, we can't be here yet. And I said, what do you mean we cannot be here yet? He says, it's too soon. We can't be here yet. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, if we leave St. Catherine's Monastery at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's at least an 8-hour drive. If we follow the speed limit all the way into Cairo, and he said, we've been stopping at checkpoints every 20 minutes. He said, we can't be here. It's impossible. And I said, but Mohammed, we're here. And what he said to me, he says, no, he says, this is a miracle. It's a miracle. And all of the guards were looking at their watches to find out what their watches were saying. And the interesting thing was that all of the watches had sped ahead to the time that it would have been if we had arrived in Cairo following the 8-hour drive. However, it had only taken us 4 hours, according to the clocks on the buildings around us and to the drivers in the other vehicles. It had only taken about half the amount of time. People on the bus began asking what was happening, and I've seen this phenomenon with individuals before. I've never seen it with a large group. And it was interesting to me to see it with a large group because it appeared to be so much easier, and here's what I believe happened that day with that group. What Western science is telling us today is that through the power of human emotion, we have direct access to the four fundamental forces of nature. We discussed this in our last section. Inherent in those forces is our perception of time and space and distance. What was happening with the people in our group on this journey is that rather than feeling the feeling of how long the trip was taking to get to where we were going, rather than saying, are we there yet? Or how much longer is it going to take? They were engaged in genuine, it was genuine, heartfelt conversations of emotion, of the exuberance and the anticipation and the joy of already being in the chambers of the pyramid. They were speaking among themselves about what they were feeling when they were having discussions, what they were feeling in the upper chamber, the king's chamber, or the middle, or the queen's chamber.